All right, we have just finished the presentations this evening, and so we will continue on with the rest of the board meeting with the hearing session. Board President's report, I have nothing to report this evening. Board of Education reports, legislative. You have anything? Mike? No? Jessica? No? Go ahead.
Okay, first of all, I want to congratulate all the principals and the open houses have culminated. They did an excellent job. I was able to get over to Merced and Orangewood, and what a great, both schools were very, very focused on family and family oriented. They opened up their hearts to the community. Congratulations to all the students who won awards over at Hollingcrest. Coronado High School, West Covina High School, and Edgewood. And for Edgewood, it was even more spectacular because it was their very first class. So that was so incredibly memorable. Ms. Poulos and I went to the CSBA Delegate Assembly. And just to bring you up to speed on two things. Number one, Region 23 is planning their annual summit. However, this year we're looking at doing a full-day conference. So March 2015, we'll let you all know the date. And then the other thing that I wanted to share with my colleagues is the governor's May revise. The governor put on his May revise about CalSTRS, and that there was a rumble through the room. I think Ms. Poulos would agree with me when we saw that his goal is to address the $74 billion deficit, and he wants to bring it fully funded over 30 years. And he wants to do it pulling together school employers, which would be us, the state, as well as employees. And so what he's proposing is that the state contribution will go from 3.04% up to 6.3%, and they want to do that over 3 years. They would like the members of STRS themselves to go from 8% to 10.25% paid over 3 years. But the biggest jump is going to be for the employer, which is what we are. And they want us to go from, over the course of 7 years, they want us to get to 19%. That is a big, big contribution. So, and, you know, they said that they're going to give the districts 7 years to get to that point. So they want to go. So anyway, I wanted to share that with you. I know Dr. Coughlin will probably present more to us as it gets closer. But that was the biggie, and that's a big effect for us. And, of course, it caused a lot of questions from the floor about how do we then do teacher raises, how do we keep our districts whole with a 19% contribution over 7 years. So that's what I wanted to share with you. Thank you.
All right, thank
you. Yeah, mm-hmm. They only covered STRS with us. They didn't cover PERS. So, holy cow, so... it'll be toughies for us. Okay, that's it.
Very good. Thank you for that. Next item on the agenda is items from the floor for public comment. Does anybody wish to address the board at this time? Seeing none, we'll go on with the business session and the approval of the agenda and consent items. Is there anybody that would like to add or remove an item from?
I'd like to add some.
Go ahead.
I'd like to add 12, 15, and can we add 16? I don't know if we have to vote on the floor or we can add 16.
I just had a quick, it's just a cleanup thing on 12.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's just it'll just be a second.
No problem.
What else did she say?
I thought she said.
We can do 16, but not 15? Okay.
Not 15?
Not 15. We have to actually vote on that.
16?
He said yes.
And then I wanted to take off 27.
I also wanted to remove 23.
Twenty-three, did you say?
Yeah.
Okay, so that means I have on consent item number 16, the removal from consent item number 23. And the removal of item number 27, and there is no...
Number 12.
Ms. Olds wants to talk about that in a minute. And...
Quickly, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no item number 28. Relevance that is. Okay. Is there a motion for that item, please?
I move as amended.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Any objections? Motion is so ordered. Next item on the agenda is the very, very quick correction to the course outlines in the first reading, item number 12.
On California State University expository reading and writing on page 29, number 8. And I'd already talked to Ms. Kaplan about that, just to remove that.
On which one, I'm sorry? On page?
8. Two of nine.
Two of nine.
Number 8, just to remove that.
Ms. Polis, that's there because of the new structure for the California Common Core Standards, and it's actually in the Common Core Standards because of the parallel structure between the informational and the literature text. There's not a parallel standard for that, so it's there. California's left it there as a placeholder because they want to keep the numbering system and keep the parallelism, and this is taken straight from that document.
Just make that part of the explanation.
Put an explanation in, sure.
So then when people in the future are reading it, they'll say, oh, this is a placeholder for future changes?
You got it.
Because I certainly didn't know what it meant.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
I was pleased to see the AP Physics 1 and 2.
No, that was it. I told you it was quick.
That's no, it's fine. We have plenty of time.
I'll move as amended for first reading.
Thank
I'll
you.
Second it.
Are there any objections? It's been moved and seconded, but are there any objections?
No.
Hearing none, motion is so ordered. We have item number 13 is an information report regarding curriculum development process.
We thought it would be important to give a little background on some of the things that we're doing this summer so that the board is up to date on the summer work that we're doing and where the kind of work that we're embarking on that took us about 10 to 15 years to do in the past, we're starting on for year one. So the curriculum development process really is us balancing curriculum instruction and assessment with teachers, but for the district piece, it's really about that collaboration, that bringing of the different schools and members of the school district together to collaborate, to come up with a core curriculum that's representative of the district as a whole, that meets and aligns to those standards and is supportive of our LCAP and our strategic plan. With the why we're doing this, these are four quotes from a variety of resources. Two of them are from the strategic plan and two of them are from the academic program survey. The academic program survey is the federal tool that when districts are in program improvement or school sites are in program improvement, we have to use to measure our success in meeting those accountability requirements. And in all of those documents, we have the charge, if you will, to come up with some sort of curriculum guide or curriculum development process for our teachers and ultimately for our students. We use the state standards and the strategic plan as our guiding force. From there, as we just worked with, we look at our course outlines and our grade level standards that are developed in relationship to those state standards and our strategic plan. Then we develop district curriculum guides. Those are based on those course outlines, and they include basic summary of district objectives, resources, and tasks. Sites can put together site pacing guides. Those can take a variety of formats, but those are something that a site would do and grade level teams would look at, all the way down to our teacher-created lessons. And that just sort of shows you the hierarchy that our curriculum development goes through and what that looks like in relationship to the more recent curriculum documents you've been seeing. In using a district curriculum guide, we've gotten a lot of questions from the field on what are the elements and what do those look like. Essentially, the elements that you see on that page, such as time frame, and for a district-wide curriculum guide, it would be things like quarters or semesters worth of work, the standards that we would teach, not only teach for the course, but things we would emphasize and things that we would introduce at different time periods during the course of the year. The resources that we would use, both our core resources, which are required, and our supplemental resources, which we're putting through a new process eventually for identifying those. Various district assessments that we would be giving that all grade levels or courses within that particular area would be administering. Projects, tasks, and writing prompts. Writing is a major focus for us as a district, and so the teams are working to have a variety of writing prompts, performance tasks, and different project-based learning pieces that they'll be putting together. Identifying strategies, having helpful hints as we get more information from the state and federal government about our new accountability system, about standards, about what our kids need to know and be able to do, and things that will help them learn. There will be information there that we develop. And then finally, our differentiation in our intervention. That's a major portion when we look at district-wide interventions that we can provide and making sure that we provide differentiated structures. So these are sort of the buckets, if you will, of our curriculum design process. We'll work with many of these this summer, and they'll be in a more skeletal position. But this is our first year really working with the standards, the Next Generation Science Standards and the Common Core State Standards as a whole for every teacher in the district, every day, every classroom. So we'll have the basic bones of that, and then we'll begin to flesh it out and make it more detailed as we get feedback throughout the years from the teachers at the school sites. The site pacing guide you can see looks very similar. I would have to say that the major difference here is you'll see the note for lessons and units of study, and the time frame is what is very different here. That's with the weekly and the daily planning. That could be done either as a course or a grade level team or just as a school site. That's really a piece where we define the core big rocks, if you will, and the school sites start to narrow that down for their specific students and for their specific grade levels. This next slide talks about the development process that we'll be looking at this summer. Everything with a star next to it is where our curriculum development teams will sort of make decisions. They're going to decide, are we going to look at timelines for assessment as quarterly or trimester semester for this first year? Are we going to have our writing assignment? We've talked about having a writing assignment as our major district assessment using the MyAccess software as our scoring and having that be tied very closely to district training, but the teachers will be creating the prompts, either choosing them from the MyAccess software or designing them ourselves. They'll also work with the standards and note which things will be introduced and the emphasis for pieces of the standards. They'll identify the core resources that we're going to have and work very hard to come up with a solid list of what our adopted supplemental resources are that are existing. Academic vocabulary is very important, so they'll look at that, and then they'll try to design some options for performance tasks or writing prompts for the different classrooms. Those would be optional for teachers to use as a resource. Really, that curriculum guide document from the district will define the core, but it'll also be a real resource for teachers. Over and above the teacher's guide, what we value and believe tied to all of our professional development. Bring this next slide to you because one of the challenges that we have moving forward is our accountability piece. We don't quite have one from the state yet. You can see in 2014-15 will be our official baseline year with CASP or SBAC, as you've heard before. In year two, and we got this information when we went to the recent May revise piece where they were talking about LCAP. In year two, that'll be the CASP piece starting in 15-16, we'll take that test again, but we won't have achievement growth until the summer of that 2016-17 school year when we'll really be able to look at statewide achievement growth that we'll have. That's why the writing assessments that we're going to be doing and the school-based assessments that they'll be doing will be so important. CASP is also, through the Smarter Balance Consortium, are issuing an item bank in the fall for districts to use as an item bank, possibly for district-wide or school-wide classroom-based assessments. We want to get a glimpse of that before we implement a full-blown assessment piece.
What is the CASP? Stanford, California?
California Assessment of Academic Skills, I want to say, and Pupil Progress.
What was the
S? I think it's skills. It's pupil progress, I know, at the end.
This is the first time seeing this one. Thank you.
This is our outline for the next 3 years, if you will, or 3 parts. This summer, they're going to meet and collaborate. That's a big deal for us, is to come together, bringing, you know, all 3 of our high schools together and collaborating on English 1 or English 2 and seeing what are the core pieces of a course look like, or Algebra 1. We're going to design and draft, that's important to say there, draft a curriculum guide that we will take feedback on during the course of the next school year to revise in the during the following summer. Those documents during the school year will be shared with teachers. They'll gather feedback. Hopefully they'll be implementing the items. Teachers will submit the feedback on their assessments and curriculum guides to the Ed Services team. If we feel we need to call some extra meetings, we will, but we're really trying to not disrupt the classroom for the curriculum development process. We want teachers to be able to feel comfortable participating in all of the other professional development we have for them as individual teachers during the school year, during most of our curriculum development during the summer. Then again, meeting in the summer, they'll review that feedback. They'll look at new information that we've gotten from the state or the feds or new trainings that we've done, review all that and see where we need to go next with building our next curriculum piece. In most districts, that takes about 3 to 5 years to get a really strong document. So we're well on our way. We're really excited about it. And we're looking forward to what will happen in the future. But this is just the beginning of where we are with this. Any questions?
How are you collecting the feedback?
The feedback will be collected via just a handwritten document. In my past experience, worked with district assessments and curriculum documents for about 15 years. We've tried all different kinds of ways. The best way to do it is to have them fill in their school name. We usually color code the courses and the grade levels just so they don't get mixed up. And then it's just a free narrative that they write. Anything they want to tell us. Collect all of those. Generally, myself and the director would read all of them ourselves. If we see that there's a challenge that we're having before the summer and we need to address it, we either pull the groups together, go meet with the school site, work through that piece, and then the teams will read them at the end of the year to make new decisions. It's been really effective in my past experience.
And then as you collect the feedback, what if there's one particular school that has more difficult? They have difficulty, and the other schools are very accepting of, yes, this is how it should go, but one school is feeling like, we know our students, and that's not going to work for them. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to address those issues?
Typically, when those types of issues come up, those are staff development moments for us, and so we usually go out and meet with the school site, work with them, listen to them, see if they need more training, see if they need more support, how is that working. I try to caution the teams in not making a single decision because of a single evaluation or a single school's view. It's a district-wide view. Also encourage the teams to sort of push the envelope. So if we know from research, if we know from working with CDE, if we know from the information that we've dug through with the assessments and the released items and all of that, that this is the way we should be going, then we talk to the people. And then we provide training. So that's why it's a very cyclical process. The training we have this year will influence the work we do next summer. And then the feedback we get at the end of the year will influence the work we're going to do next summer. And it starts a whole cycle. People have asked me, what is this document going to look like? I can give you the bones, but I can't tell you exactly what it'll look like because we need to go through that process. It needs to be our document that we've created because of the training and the needs we have as a district. So there'll be some scientific pieces, and then the art will be how do we deal with the people and what do we give them for what they need.
Thank you for explaining that.
No problem.
I just wanted to say thank you. This is well done, and you made it very easy to follow and understand what's going on. So thank you very much.
Thank you
to your team. Please pass along my thanks.
Yes, Delia and Cheryl, we helped present this to the principals and all. They've been working a lot of late evening, so let them go tonight.
Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is item number 15, a declaration for the need for fully qualified educators.
This particular item, there was a question whether they could go on consent. Unfortunately, by law, they don't allow you to put this one on consent. But But this is something we take every year just in case the following year we do need to hire anybody on emergency waivers or emergency credentials or limited permits. I don't necessarily anticipate. We haven't had to do that for a number of years. But if we don't make this declaration and then we do have that need, we wouldn't be able to. So as an extra precaution, we'd take this forward. But I don't anticipate we would hire anybody that's on emergency or waivers. Excuse me.
Seconded. It's been moved and seconded. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the motion passes. The motion is approved. Item 16 is on consent. Item number 23 was removed from consent.
I just wanted know is you could give us a little bit more information on what exactly the software is, because it's quite expensive and it's quite a long term contract. And why is it so expensive if the software, what does it do?
Well, I can talk to part of it. The HRS, the human resources system, mm-hmm. It actually is the system that we use for documenting all the employees, put them in the payroll system. It's connected directly to LACO. All the credential information that comes from the state comes down to the county and is uploaded through the HRS system. So it's a system that we need to have in order to put people into the system, into the process, and to be able to establish payroll. Otherwise, we'd have to go on our own system. Very few districts are outside the county with that type of a system. So the HRS is everything that has to do with personnel and payroll and all the above with employees. Okay. PeopleSoft, I'm not sure, but I think that's a different issue.
Also with a financial system, with what we use to make sure that we're communicating with the county, that we're able to make the payroll, pay the people. This is a renewal of a contract. It's a five-year agreement, and bringing it for board consideration.
And so it's strictly through LACO, and this is their only authorized?
This is it.
And the other one I had was a weird one that they have in here. It's on page 23I. It's paragraph 27, alcohol and drug-free workplace. Obviously, we promote an alcohol and drug-free workplace in the school district, but I find it strange that because they're providing software to us, that this would be part of the contract. And so I was wondering, does it have to be there? How does it affect any policy we may have in place? Do we have things that contradict what their policy says? Does it need to be there?
You know, this is their agreement. I'm sure they have some lawyer on their side to put it in there for some reason. But this is their agreement. I don't believe I can just scratch it out, take it out.
And part of the reason they propose a contract that we have to approve is we also have that same right to look at a contract and say, we don't agree to this. Why is it here? What can we do for it? I mean, it may not be an issue in terms of we don't have board policy that contradicts it or doesn't work with it, but when we're approving a contract that says we're going to certify under penalty of perjury, not just that we agree that we're going to follow this, we are certifying under penalty of perjury, something that can give people jail time and $500,000 fines, that we're going to do something. I want to hear more than it's just part of their contract.
If the consensus of the board, I can contact LACO and find out why that's in there.
Is there a time urgency on this contract as such?
The term of this is July 1st, so if you want to...
June 10th? It's an interesting question. It may be simply that they want us to abide by all Schedule 1 definitions of and follow the federal rules and laws regarding all Schedule 1 drugs as such, and if we were to take a Colorado-type like action, that we want to make sure that we're fully committed to whatever. I don't know.
And for the record, I'm not necessarily concerned with the state of California's rules. I'm more concerned with the Los Angeles County Board of Education's alcohol and drug-free workplace policy. Mm-hmm.
So what would you like?
How about just an explanation as to why it's there? I mean, at least start at that point.
Yeah, I mean, before we start certifying under penalty of perjury to something,
we'll pull their policy, we'll look at our policy too,
and make sure they match.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that when whoever certifies under penalty of perjury, they don't get in trouble.
Interesting. Very good. All right, so we'll table this until till June 10th then. What's
yes,
that?
Yes, they all have to be drug tested.
Well, maybe not. We'll think about that one. We'll think about that one.
We'll read their policy and decide.
No. In item number 27... then the next item on the agenda, 27, and Ms. Shoemaker, also a question on that.
Yes, I don't know if Paula wanted to start because she.
I'm sorry, did you ask for it off? I'm
I
sorry.
Took it off.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So are you calling in?
Yes, sorry.
I'm going to give you a little background of why I'm so concerned. It was really great at the delegate assembly that one of the board members from Walnut gave me some information about children in poverty. And throughout what she gave me to read, and her superintendent had passed it on to them, was how that sometimes the only meal children get is what's at school. And it's difficult for me. I know that we waive any fees for the reduced lunch, to say that children at the charter school will have to pay that fee when I don't think that us as a district should be paying it. I know that we've already this year took money out, lost money from our students, and we. So I'm not asking to supplement it. I don't know if there's a way that they can step up and offer it at no cost to their children, or if they can look at if we can ask them to relook at that, because eating is really important, and I don't want that. Meals are very important to a certain segment of our population, and I don't want that to be a deterrent of parents having choice to go to a charter school, because they may be going further, getting their students there, but then on top of that having 70 cents extra a day coming out of their pocket, which they may not have, and that could be the deciding factor why they don't choose the charter school. And I'm not asking for our district to take it out of our pocket, because our students here shouldn't be paying for the bottom line at another school because they chose to go independent. And they wanted that flexibility with their money. But it's really hard for me to say we're going to charge them if they haven't made sure that they can't pay for it themselves out of their pocket like we do.
I just want to make it clear. I hear what you're saying, and I don't disagree. This is what they decided to do. We did
right.
not tell them to. I just want to make it clear to you and the public. This was not something that the district said they should do. In the conversations that Dr. Hoekland had with the charter school, our only concern was that it was cost neutral. That the lunch program was cost neutral. And this is, I believe, what they came up with.
And
right.
I appreciate that clarification. Yes, I think that's very important.
One of the requests that the charter school has for next year is to increase their service at lunch and the personnel, which is going to increase the cost. And because they're running very close now and that increased cost, they were looking for a way to fund that. And this was their recommendation, not only to raise 15 cents on the price of the breakfast and the lunch, but for reduced students that they would then have to pay.
Christie.
Yeah, just a minute. Okay, Mr. Flowers.
Since this they've raised their prices on their lunch programs, have they brought it to the public, to their the parents and their school system about it? Have they heard anything about it? No complaints about it?
I don't know. They would go to their own board for that.
And I don't know if they've shared that with their parents yet.
One of my concerns would be a deterrent for people having that as an option. So just not the parents that are there now, but people deciding that they can't afford the gas plus the extra meals, you know, because they're going to have to get their child there and then pay for the meal.
Go ahead.
As I'm seeing it here on page 27B, they're not increasing breakfast. It's only lunch that's being increased, correct?
That's correct.
It's
breakfast
still $1,
stays a dollar.
But lunch is going up to $1.50, K-5, and then $1.75. And then I believe, and you all can clarify since you're going to speak to them, I believe they never turn away a student. Because I know for a fact my daughter's children have not paid, not had their money, and every child has been fed. I don't know about the back end, what's happening there, but maybe clarifying that, because to your point, of course, we want every child to be fed and we don't want them to go without. But I do know that there are parents who can afford the increase. I don't know about on the reduced program, but if you can just clarify that.
I don't think our concern is on the increase. I think the concern I'm hearing, if you look at page 27B, where it says in order to cover cost charges for reduced price, those will not be waived.
Or reduce lunch. We'll have to spend 30 cents
and
we'll spend 40 cents.
That's
correct.
For me, it's a concern about both. We live in a city and have a school district where a lot of our student population qualifies for free and reduced lunch. It's the majority of our district. So 15 cents just because somebody is on full lunch does not mean that is easy for them to afford. It just means that they may have parents who are $1 over the income threshold to allow them to be on reduced or free lunch. This was a concern of mine when Edison decided to, San Jose Charter Academy went independent. Well, Edison became San Jose Charter Academy. And that was their finances. And I'm looking at this and 30 cents per breakfast, 40 cents per lunch may not seem like a lot, but these are over the students who can least afford it. So instead of finding a way where maybe the principal takes a pay decrease of 5% for, you know, from now through eternity and cover these students so they can make sure that they eat, they're trying to ask these students, and 30 cents may not seem like a lot to you, or 40 cents may not seem like a lot to you, but when a student is coming in, and Ms. Polis pointed it out, and the parents are going, okay, well, if they go to the charter school, I have this 70 cents that I need to pay, it may be a deterrent for them going to the charter school. And then when you add up that there are a lot of times when it's not one student in a family, it's two students, it's three students. You know, my sister has three students at Merced. So this 70 cents would be 210 for her. It starts to add up.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, if Edison wants to do this contract this way, I would approve it just so we can make sure that there is something in place for the start of the school year. And I would want to immediately give notice that they need to find another way to provide services to the students. Because we have made it a priority in our district that reduced students do not pay anything. And I'm not seeing anything from Edison that shows, San Jose Charter Academy, that shows they've done anything to come up with another solution other than charge the students who can least afford it.
Well, I'm willing to let them try it. Again, this is only the reduced students that are being affected, not the free. And we don't know what percentage that is. We don't know how much of the population, if I'm not mistaken, isn't it less than 50% is free and reduced?
Less than 50% is free and reduced. I don't know the percentage of reduced.
So the free versus reduced. My only concern is that a child doesn't go hungry. And I know I've been there, and I've never seen a child turned away. But perhaps you all can clarify that. What is their plan if somebody doesn't come with their money, doesn't have their 70 cents for that day? What happens if that bill is adding up because they can't afford that? Maybe their form needs to be refilled in, and parents don't realize that they can update their forms for the school year. So maybe just clarify that. But I'm willing to let them try.
We also see they haven't notified the parents yet. So when are they going to notify the parents?
I don't know if they've notified the parents or not. I don't know. I don't know if they're waiting for this agreement. They may have. I don't know.
Well, I'm here the three to at least get some questions answered and come back again on the 10th. That's certainly the direction. But then at the same time, if there are costs that, I know that we have certain supervisorial oversight costs that we incur that we charge them that 3% for, and maybe we need to reevaluate that aspect of it if this is such a fine line that this is an issue where they're going to go to help whatever cost that they've got, that maybe we need to readdress that also. So if we'll bring it back on this June 10th if you get some of these questions answered, and we'll move on from there.
Thank you.
I didn't say that. I just want to give more information about it. I didn't say I wouldn't vote for it. I just want to bring it back on the table. And we should bring these questions back.
Right. But I guess
it becomes almost a question as well. Why are we approving this? They have their own board. They have this. So we're a go-between in this thing. We don't have authority to say, no, you can't. We can't overrule their decisions by their board. We're just acting as this conduit, and we're saying, well, we aren't going to be this conduit in this sort of thing. Well, and that just seems rather silly to me.
We would no longer serve lunch, would be my...
Okay, and so they'd go to a provision that's probably far more uneconomical capacity, and so the increases would be far more significant. I'm just guessing off the top of my head, but, we have the capabilities. We've got proximity, we've got expertise, we've got the facilities, we've got all of these things playing into that part, and so...
I'm not arguing that. I just want to make sure that it's not a deterrent for the neediest students in our district not to have choice like the rest of the students in our district. 70 cents doesn't seem like a lot, but when I knocked on doors, you'd be surprised at what $5 a week meant to people, and this would be more than $5 a week, and what they said they could buy several meals. It was amazing what these people told me they could buy with $5 to feed their children. And I do not want to put people in the situation where they're not going to have choice like the remainder of the students in our district, that choice needs to be for everybody, just not for the few.
Yes. All right. That's the last item on the agenda. So any other board discussion? We have... it's Edgewood is tomorrow.
Tomorrow, right? Yes.
Oh, I have it. Had it perfect.
Right by the gate across the street, there will be parking spaces for the Board of Education. At 6 o'clock, they will be honoring the teachers who have been chosen by the students in their multi-purpose room. And then the teachers will go over to the gym to see the students if they want to be present for that.
It's at 6 o'clock? Nice.
And then we'll go on to our places on the stage. And
29th is West Covina High School graduation. Last day of school is Friday, which culminates with the Edgewood, Holland Crest, and Walnut Grove promotions, and then Coronado High School graduation on Friday evening. And that's at Edgewood High School.
Are middle schools taken care of? They're all going to be covered?
Maybe at Walnut Grove. I don't know where everyone else is. Edgewood.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And our next...
I think he's selling them on the black market.
There you go.
And the next meeting is June 10th, and with that, this meeting is adjourned at 9:03.